program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will continue reading from the book Charlie Joe Jackson's Guide to Not Reading by Tommy Greenwald. Chapter 13. The Library Can Be Your Friend. Don't automatically assume that just because the library is filled with books, it's a bad place. It all depends on why you're going there. For example, there's a pretty good movie section in most libraries, and they have computers. The library in my town even has a place to buy snacks. I like to grab a book that I have no intention of reading, then amble over to the cafe for a little hot chocolate and conversation. Every once in a while, I'll even open the book. Sometimes a girl I know will wander over and ask me what I'm reading. Unless she goes to my school, in which case she'll know that books and I don't get along. Then I'll ask her what she's reading. Then I'll ask her lots of questions about her book, which shows how curious and sensitive I am. Then I'll say it sounds like a book I might like. She'll smile. I'll smile back. Yeah, like I said, the library can be your friend. The library can also be your mortal enemy. Take the girl out of the equation. Add your mother and your sister in a complete lack of texting, and the library becomes a kind of hell on earth. A pit of despair. A black hole of desperation and misery. A place you don't want to be, especially on a Saturday. But that Saturday, the day after my little kitchen table chat with Mom and Ms. McGibney, I was sitting in the Eastport Public Hell on Earth with a copy of Billy's Bargain in my hand. I tried to find a corner of the library where I wouldn't be seen, because I had a reputation to uphold. And then, believe it or not, I started reading. Oh, what? So yeah, this should be the place in the book where I tell you that it turns out that the book was amazing. Time flew by. And all of a sudden, I looked up and it was 8 o'clock. Oh, I had discovered the joys of reading and storytelling, and the characters spoke to me. And not only did I want to read more books, I wanted to move into the library. Only that's not what happened at all. Listen, I've got nothing against Billy's Bargain or the guy who wrote it. Some guy named Ted Hauser. I'm sure Ted Hauser is a perfectly nice man with a great family, and congratulations to him for writing a book that most kids seem to enjoy. I'm sure his mom is really proud of him and brags about him at dinner parties. But no matter how nice a guy and how successful an author Ted Hauser is, I'm pretty sure that doesn't give him the right to ruin my life. After 2 hours, and believe me, I was counting, pretty much a second at a time, I realized I had read 18 pages. Woo! Now, I'm no expert. In fact, far from it. But I'm pretty sure 18 pages in 2 hours is not record-setting speed. At this rate, I was going to finish the book in about 3 years. I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was my sister, Megan, who had four, count 'em, four books in her hands. How's it going? Are you getting anywhere? Are you enjoying the book? Sometimes having a nice sister is no better than having a mean sister. Trust me, sometimes it's worse. I looked up at her and rubbed my eyes. Oh yeah, I'm cruising along. It's actually really good. I'll bet it is. I looked around at everyone else in the library, seemingly there of their own free will. Who are these people who seemed to actually enjoy the act of just sitting there, doing nothing but looking at words on a page, and somehow finding some sense of happiness or joy or satisfaction or fulfillment? There were even people reading the newspaper, for crying out loud. The newspaper! When you could go online and catch three quick headlines that tell you everything you might need to know. War, peace, disaster, a new D-movie premiere. It's all just a click away, thanks to the good people at Google. Who were these people, and what was I doing here with them? Megan sat down next to me. Listen, I'll make you a deal. This is probably the stupidest thing I'll ever do in my life, and I'm sure I'll regret it forever. She stopped. A second thought's kind of stop. Go on. Go on. My mouth didn't say it, but my brain was screaming it. I can't stand seeing you this mopey. I know you're in a time crunch. I'll read the book for you tonight. This one time, and that's it. From now on, you read your own books. Read the books. Like I said, sometimes having a nice sister is the best freaking thing in the world. Chapter 14, A Brief Tribute to My Awesome Sister. The funny thing about Megan Jackson is that she is completely not funny. She has zero sense of humor, she can't tell a joke to save her life, and she doesn't get what's funny about The Simpsons, which is just sad. Let's call her comically challenged. But, and I've racked my brain about this, believe me, that's the only thing in the whole entire world that is wrong with Megan Jackson. She's pretty. She's nice. She's smart. She's athletic. She's friendly to dorks and others less fortunate than she is. She's just an all-around kind of amazing person. And I thought this even before she decided to save my life. I mean, I haven't always been crazy about her boyfriends, and occasionally she hijacks the bathroom. But basically, I scored big time with my big sister. She's what they call good people. I love that expression. How can a person be a people? What does it even mean? Chapter 14. You can go to the movies and still be reading. I love going to the movies. When I'm not grounded, that is. It's like one of my favorite things. And sometimes when I get back from a movie and my parents ask me where I was, I say, reading. If I'm lying, I'm dying. Seriously. Check out all the ways you read at the movies. Number one, ticket stub. Make sure you got a ticket for the right movie. Number two, trailer credits. Number three, this movie is rated blank. Number four, opening credits. Number five, subtitles. Foreign movies can be good, and the girls are totally beautiful. Number six, closing credits. Number seven, the posters outside the theater. Number eight, the menu at the diner after the movie. Number nine, the IMDb reviews of the movie that you check out when you get home. Number 10, the texts you get from your friends arguing about whether the movie was any good or not. So, after inwardly jumping up and down and screaming for joy, it was the library after all, and I didn't want to make a scene and distract all those dedicated readers, I decided to take my sister out for ice cream. It was the least I could do. And I kind of figured I owed her one, you know? Actually, if you count the number of pages in Billy's bargain, I owed her. So, and here is where the story gets weird. We get to the ice cream place, and who's there? Timmy McGibney! That's right. The backstabbing book plot admitting he's in as much trouble as you are. Supposedly grounded Timmy McGibney. But it's not just that he was out when he was supposed to be in. After all, I'm also out when I'm supposed to be in. It's who he's out with, who he's currently sharing a chocolate shake with, who he's breaking my heart with. Remember when I said that Timmy wasn't interested in girls yet? Well, scratch that. Drum roll, please. Say hello to Hannah Slavero. You're probably wondering why I waited this long to introduce you to the love of my life. Perfectly valid question. To be honest, I wasn't sure I wanted to bring her up at all. I mean, come on. What does Hannah Slavero have to do with this book? What is the most perfect creature that God and or the universe ever created have to do with telling people how not to read? As far as I can tell, nothing. So my intention was to leave her out of it. Out of sight, out of mind, right? Wrong! I've been head over heels for Hannah Slavero since... what's today? Saturday? Let's see. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. About 7 years. I first laid eyes on Hannah in kindergarten when she came up to bat in a kickball game. I was pitching. Well, to be technical, rolling. I was sporting that classic who does this girl think she is smirk as I gently guided the ball down the path to meet her girlishly uncoordinated foot. Well, she pretty much kicked that ball to Arkansas. I think it's still going. As she rounded first base, she stuck her tongue out at me. As she rounded second base, she put her thumb on her nose and waggled her fingers at me. As she rounded third base, she wrinkled her nose at me and smiled. By the time she touched home plate, I was in love. A brief tribute to Hannah Slavero. Hannah's really smart, but not scary genius smart. She's not the most creative person, or the most funny, or the most anything, really. It's just that, well, for me, she's the most everything. No one else even comes close, as far as I'm concerned. Here's an example. If you compare Hannah to Eliza, okay, I can hear my mother's voice saying, "That's not a nice thing to do." Eliza is definitely prettier piece by piece, if you get what I mean. Great hair, great eyes, great skin, great everything, and flirty in a way that says, "I'm gorgeous," over and over again to every guy she talks to. Hannah, on the other hand, has black hair, perfectly pleasant eyes, and a tiny gap between her two front teeth that her braces never fixed. She loves life. She's always just totally herself, and she doesn't feel she has to broadcast to the world how pretty she is. Plus, she loves dogs, chocolate, and the Beatles, my three favorite things in the world. The only downside to Hannah was her twin brother, Teddy. If Hannah is flawless, then Teddy is, well, flawful. He's always known that I'm in love with his sister, and he's made it his mission in life to make me miserable. But other than that, it was no contest. Piece by piece, Eliza is absolutely prettier, girlier, flirtier, that kind of thing. But when it comes right down to it, she's no Hannah. Okay, enough obsessing. But wait, here she was, sharing a shake with Timmy. And it wasn't just that. And it wasn't just that they were giggling, or that I could have sworn that his left pinky was suspiciously close to her right index finger. It was that they were sitting there enjoying themselves with what seemed like half the kids in my grade looking at them with awe and reverence. Okay, it was probably only about 10 kids, but you get what I'm saying. Hannah wasn't wearing anything fancy. Let it be t-shirt and black jeans, but man, she looked good. Isn't that Hannah Slavero? Megan asked, master of the obvious. Duh, I answered. What's she doing here with Timmy McGibney? She asked, master of the obviously impossible to answer question. How am I supposed to know? I said. Before she could ask yet another irritating question, I headed straight for their table. Timmy saw me coming and didn't seem the slightest bit disturbed. In fact, he had a little gleam in his eye like he was up to something. Wow. Hey, Charlie Joe, what are you doing here? Aren't you grounded? Of course I'm grounded. Aren't you grounded? Timmy took a deep sip of his shake, which I had to admit looked completely delicious. I'm here with Hannah because we're studying together for the science test. It was a well-known fact that Hannah, on top of her countless other attributes and state of complete perfection, was extremely good at science. I looked longingly at the many flavors of ice cream that waited, tantalizing, just out of reach. Why do you get to go for ice cream to study for science? Can you do that at your house? It was here that Hannah decided to weigh in. Charlie Joe, did you get my text? This was totally off topic. She sent random texts to me all the time. They were always about annoyingly pointless topics, like what time the band concert was or when the Spanish homework was due. Basically, any text from Hannah that didn't profess undying love was pointless. I turned to look at her, which, as usual, hurt my eyes a little bit. It's not like Hannah's beauty is blinding or anything. It's not, but she's got this glowing thing, like she swallowed a giant light bulb or something, and when I look at her, I have to squint my eyes. Although I tried to make sure no one notices. No, I didn't get your text. My parents took my cell phone away. Ouch! She giggled. Timmy butted back in before Hannah and I got into anything resembling a conversation. Tryouts were pretty fun today, huh? He said gloatingly. Yeah, they were super, I replied sarcastically. The lacrosse tryouts had been that morning. I didn't exactly set the place on fire. It was pretty obvious that Timmy was going to make the lacrosse team and I wasn't. And, of course, Eliza had nothing to do with it. Meaning, if Timmy hadn't been so insecure and I hadn't been such a loudmouth buttonski, we'd still be friends. He'd still be reading my books and I wouldn't be sitting here watching him go straw to straw with my future wife. Timmy took another long, luxurious sip of his shake, then looked at me. You never answered my question. If you're grounded, why are you out getting ice cream? Well, it just so happens Megan and me were at the library reading. Thank you very much, I said. Megan and I, Hannah interrupted. It was another well-known fact that Hannah, on top of her countless other attributes and state of complete faultlessness, was also extremely good at grammar. Megan and I repeated for her benefit. Timmy raised his eyebrows skeptically. You were reading? Give me a break, He dismissed me with a wave of his hand and returned to his shake. For some reason, I didn't stop there. That's right. Not only was I reading, I finished Billy's Bargain. And I'll have you know it rocked. Timmy raised his eyebrows farther than I thought was humanly possible. You finished it in one day? I was in too deep now. There was no retreat. Pretty much. I started squirming in my mind a little bit. Really? What happens in the end? Before I could make up some sort of answer, Megan plopped down next to Hannah, as if they'd always been best friends. I really like your shoes, she said, saving the day yet again. Hannah looked at my sister in awe. She may have been a goddess in my eyes, but I guess deep down, Hannah was just another middle school kid who got really excited when a high school kid paid attention to her. As the two girls started gabbing about footwear, I saw my opening. Well, I'm gonna go get us a couple of cones. Timmy looked at me for a minute, then decided to go in for the kill. You know what, though? When I'm not grounded anymore, Hannah and me are going to go to the movies. We're going out now. I stopped in my tracks. I started sweating. I saw my life flash before my eyes. Sadly, a lot of it seemed to involve me adoring Hannah and Hannah not particularly caring. But mainly, I was just completely shocked. Hannah looked up from her conversation with Megan, and I could tell she was about to say something. Thank God she was going to put an end to this madness and tell Timmy that that was the most ridiculous thing she'd ever heard. But all she said was, Hannah and I. The chapters are getting longer. I don't know what's happening. I'm trying to stop it, but it feels like it's out of my control a little bit. I don't blame you if you're pretty mad at me right about now. I promised you very, very short chapters, and I'm not delivering. I guess all I can say is that your customer complaints are duly noted. I'm aware of the problem, and I hope to have the system running normally again as soon as possible. Thank you for your patience. Chapter 15. There, that's better. If you're forced to read a book, make sure you don't care about what happens. To make sure you don't get too invested in the characters or story of whatever book you're reading, please remember these simple facts. 1. The characters aren't real. Fictional. 2. You don't know these people personally. Nonfiction. 3. They may well be dead. Historical biography. 4. They would ignore you in a restaurant. Sports biography. 5. What they're doing could never happen. Science fiction. 6. There's no way that awesome girl would fall in love with that dorky guy. Teen fiction. 7. There's no way that skinny kid could strike out that huge kid. Sports fiction. 8. None of this will matter later in life. Math textbook. 9. None of this will matter ever. Science textbook. 10. Who cares? Pretty much any book ever. The town I live in, Eastport, is one of those towns that's often called a great place to raise kids. I think the translation of that is, you kids have been given good schools, good teachers, good parents, good extracurricular activities, good sports teams, good arts programs, good tutors, and good guidance counselors. You kids have been given many things, and so the least you can do is take advantage of your good fortune and become extremely successful. Not to put any pressure on us or anything, but hey, I'm not complaining. We have an awesome beach, a pretty cool downtown, a couple of movie theaters, and an amazing place called Juki's. No one seems to know who or what Juki is or was. Juki's is an adult-free, stress-free zone where you can play ping pong, shoot hoops, listen to music, and generally not have to think about parents or grades or anything important. After the whole craziness at the ice cream place, my sister and I went to Juki's to recover. I decided we should play air hockey, which is a great activity if you don't feel like talking, since it's too loud to have a conversation. Megan tried anyway. "That was weird, huh?" she shouted at me as she smacked the little red puck. "Yeah," I shouted as I smacked back. "You must be really annoyed right about now," Megan concluded as she scored the winning goal and both the game and the conversation were over. Chapter 16. Make sure you've read at least one book to completion so that if someone asks you what's your favorite book, you can answer the question. I think the only book I ever read all the way through was The Giving Tree. Have you ever read that? Man, that Shel Silverstein. One scary looking dude, by the way. Check out the picture on the back of the book. Knew exactly how to write for non-readers like myself. I think the whole thing had like 62 words at the most, and yet it told the coolest story about this little boy and his special friendship with this tree and how the kid takes and takes and takes from the tree until the tree has nothing left to give. Eventually, it's just a stump, and when the little boy comes back as an old man, a stump is all he needs because he just needs a place to sit. Actually, as I describe it, it sounds kind of sad, but it's great. It's, well, I believe the word is touching. Just between you and me, I have to admit, I did cry a little bit there at the end. It's almost enough to make someone want to read another book, but not quite. That night, as I was sitting in my room, trying not to think about Timmy and Hannah, Megan knocked on my door. She came in before I could answer. "How about that Timmy and Hannah?" she said, plopping down on my bed. I pretended not to care. "Yeah, whatever." "So I started Billy's Bargain. It's actually really good," Megan went on, mercifully changing the subject. "The kid, Billy, goes through these ups and downs with the whole baseball thing. And by the end, when he's pitching in the big game, I was so nervous it was like I was actually there." She looked me in the eye. "I would think a kid like you who enjoys sports would really go for a book like this." "Yeah, well, I like playing sports, not reading about them," I said. She got up to go. I know," she said, giving me a sisterly smack on the shoulder, the kind that doesn't hurt at all. "All I'm saying is, one day, you might find yourself on the pitcher's mound yourself in a similar situation, and remembering how Billy dealt with it could actually help you deal with it." "That's adorable." I waved what I hoped was a goodbye wave, but she just stood there in the doorway. "You have to start reading sometime, you know," she said lingeringly. "What are you going to do when the position paper comes up?" I froze. The position paper was the huge assignment we had to do at the end of the year and involved a ton of books. Even though it was still a couple of months away, the thought of it already made me break out in a cold sweat. I tried to shrug it off. Why would you want to bring that up right in the middle of this wonderful brother-sister bonding moment? I'm just saying, she said, but she decided not to push it. Thanks for reading the book, Megan, I said, meaning it. No sweat, she answered, also meaning it. I'll write up a detailed synopsis tomorrow after I finish the book, if you need it. Oh, I need it, I said. She flicked my earlobe and walked out the door. The next week went by like a blur. If blurs take about 1,000 years and move at the speed of a glacier, that is. Here's a quick run through. Sunday, Megan totally comes through for me. Turns out she finishes Billy's bargain in about 2 hours. How does she do it? And she gives me an awesome synopsis of the book. I start to write my paper, which is due Friday, because I want to get it over with, but it's impossible to concentrate because I don't have my cell phone to text my friends, and my dad had also disconnected the wireless on my laptop, so IMing wasn't an option either. Adults don't get it, but us kids need to be doing 7 other things while we're doing our homework. Otherwise, we're so focused on the work that we can't focus on the work. So it took me about 5 hours to write a paper that normally would have taken me 2 hours. But I finished the stupid thing and now I wouldn't have to think about it for a whole week. Note to parents, our academic, social, and future economic success depends on us being able to text, IM, check Facebook, and call our friends every 15 seconds while writing a school paper. Probably while also playing Call of Duty at the same time. If you want us to be able to concentrate, don't take away our distractions. Monday morning, I get to school and I'm greeted by the sight of Eliza Collins running up to me like she just won the lottery. Did you hear Hannah Slavero and Timmy McGibney are going out? I nod and walk maybe 2 more feet before Jake Katz runs up to me like he won half of Eliza's winning lottery ticket. Did you hear Hannah Slavero and Timmy McGibney are going out? Another nod, another 2 feet, and Pete Milano walks up to me and jabs me painfully in the ribs. Holy moly! Hannah Slavero and Timmy McGibney! Wait, is this too late to call in sick? Monday afternoon. The whole school is getting a huge kick out of watching me watch Timmy and Hannah sit together at lunch. The only one who shows any sympathy at all is Katie Friedman. Men, she said with a sigh as we were putting our lunch trays away. It's a well-known fact that Katie is suspicious and quick to judge when it comes to the male sex. Women, I answered. She laughed. Are you okay? To anybody else, I would have lied. To Katie, I said, not really. She took my hand for just a second, then dropped it. Then she said, did you know that the average lifespan of a middle school romance is 9 days? Katie Friedman is a good person. She deserved a smile, so I tried to give her one. Only 7 more days to go, I said. Tuesday afternoon. In English class, things are looking up. It appears that Ms. Farrell hasn't found out about the little arrangement that Timmy and I had. Then at the end of class, she asks to see my paper, even though it's not due for another 3 days. A bead of sweat pops out on my forehead. But it's not due for another 3 days. I know that, Charlie Joe. I just want to see where you're at. But I've barely started it. I was finished with the paper, of course. But she didn't need to know that. especially since I had told her last Friday that I was pretty much halfway through the book, which everybody knows translates to, I haven't exactly started it yet. If I showed her my final paper, she'll certainly wonder how the heck I managed to turn into a speed reader. I sneak a peek at Timmy, who's in the back row, doodling in his notebook and enjoying the festivities, and suddenly I have a brainstorm. The truth! Actually, it's on my computer at home. She hands me her cell phone. Have your mom bring it in after school so we can go over it together. Just my luck that my mom has her PTA meeting every Tuesday afternoon in the teacher's lounge. Why does my mom have to be so caring and involved? Why can't she be more like one of those moms on the news who leaves her kids at the mall overnight? I gulp. Okay. Timmy snickers and holds up his doodle, a picture of me lying in Moose's doghouse. Tuesday, late afternoon. Things are no longer looking up. In fact, they're looking down. On my way to meet my mom in the office, I get stopped by Mr. Radonsky, a former school bully who found the perfect job, gym teacher. Jackson. No first names for this guy. Yes, Mr. Radonsky? If I catch you one more time with the wrong gym shorts on, I'm going to make you do push-ups till you bleed. Good to know, Mr. Radonsky. Jackson. Yes, Mr. Radonsky? Stop being a wiseacre. I'll stop being a wiseacre if you stop using words like wiseacre. I don't say this, but I want to. He finally releases me, and I get the paper from my mom. From there, I proceed immediately to the boys' room, where I throw out the third, fourth, and fifth pages, saving the first two. I go to Ms. Farrell's classroom, where I walk in on her crying on the phone. She sees me and hangs up. Oh, Charlie Joe, Misty has a bloated stomach, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. Misty is her beloved Great Dane. There are pictures of her all over the classroom. A bloated stomach? Is that bad? She wipes her eyes with a tissue. It can be. Through my sympathy, I see an opening. Maybe we should do this another time. Now, let's do this now, she sniffles. It will help take my mind off it. Show me what you've got. I give her my two pages. If you don't mind my asking, Ms. Farrell, why do you want to see my paper before everyone else's? She wipes her eyes and looks at me for what seems like 6 days. Because Charlie Joe, for some crazy reason, I like you. I want you to do well. I want you to do great things. But for some reason, you seem to want to do only okay things. Nothing more, nothing less. You seem to have no idea how bright you are. How... And here, her voice gets that tone adults use that makes you feel guiltier than ever. Special. She sits down in her chair with a sigh. If a teacher can get a student like you to fulfill his potential, she can retire happy. She sighs again. And so I've decided to make you my project. As we go over my two pages, word for word, for the next hour, I realize that when it comes right down to it, Ms. Farrell is a pretty darn good teacher. Then she gets another call from the vet saying Misty is going to be okay as long as she watches what she eats. And the next thing you know, Ms. Farrell gets so excited she flies out the door without even saying goodbye. I may be her pet project, but I'm certainly not her pet Great Dane. Wednesday, I plead for my cell phone back. Dad laughs. I plead louder. He laughs harder. Thursday, Two teachers ask me if I've heard about Timmy and Hannah. Don't they have anything better to do? Friday. Coco eats something bad and poops in the TV room. I get elected to clean it up. I turn in my paper. The two events are unrelated. The weekend. Grounded, no phone, no internet, no television, no life. It's so quiet and boring that not only could I hear the grass grow, I could hear it complain that it wasn't being watered enough. I developed a new respect for the Amish. You know, the Amish, right? They live in Pennsylvania and deny themselves basic necessities like cars, electricity, and Game Boy. 48 hours feels like 48 years. Things finally start looking up again on Monday. Billy's bargain was behind me. I wore the right shorts in gym class. Ms. Farrell was in a great mood because her dog, Misty, was all better, ready to once again eat a small country. And Hannah had a tiny pimple on her forehead. Maybe the gods were smiling down on me after all. At lunch, I looked for Timmy. I was feeling like it was time for a new start, and I decided to let bygones be bygones. I wanted to be the bigger man. After all, Timmy was one of my oldest friends, and what's a little telling his mother on me while stabbing me in the heart between friends? Chapter 17. Timmy had come a long way since acquiring his new lady friend, so it wasn't going to be easy squeezing into his table. I believe the expression for what he was doing is holding court, telling his new admirers for the zillionth time about the exciting, nerve-wracking moment when he finally got up the guts to ask Hannah out, never expecting in a million years that she'd say yes. When he got to the end of this very inspirational story, his new best friends practically applauded in appreciation. I felt a sudden wave of nausea. Maybe I didn't want to be the bigger man after all. Maybe I wanted to be the smaller man. But I sucked it up and sat down. Timmy saw me take a seat and called me over like he was the new emperor and I was some guy from the previous regime who was going to get one last delicious meal before being executed. Yo, 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 if it ain't Charlie Joe! Timmy's new BFFs laughed as if Timmy were Dr. Seuss himself. I handed him an ice cream sandwich. Here! He looked a little confused. What's this? A peace offering. A shocking left turn. Timmy's pals suddenly looked at me with something approaching respect. Maybe in good conscience, they wouldn't be able to execute me after all. I guess there's something about doing the right thing that appeals to the savage beast in all of us. Timmy quickly realized there was no choice but to accept the gift in the spirit in which it was given. Thanks, he said eloquently. You're welcome, I said equally eloquently. We shook hands, and as he was delicately unwrapping the ice cream sandwich, I leaned over and whispered, you know, after we let a little time go by and things get back to normal, there's no reason why we can't pick up our little arrangement just like before. Timmy looked at me like I'd just smashed his lacrosse stick. Are you crazy? He hissed. Do you want to spend the rest of your life at military school? I don't. Uh-oh. The old arrangement was officially dead, which meant I would have to figure out a new plan sooner rather than later. The position paper was coming up. It's just about halftime. Bring on the marching bands. Have I told you that Hannah can twirl a baton? She's awesome at it. Part 3. Chapter 18. If at first you never read, don't try again. Before we begin the next part of our story, it would probably help to understand exactly where my deep-seated love of not reading comes from. It will help explain a lot. I trace it back to a very specific, traumatic reading experience I had as a child. I'll tell you all about it in the next chapter. Chapter 19. I think it was my 6th birthday. I've tried to block it out, so some of the details are fuzzy. My dad, who's read about a zillion books, in my case, the apple not only fell far from the tree, it fell in another orchard, in another country, somehow got it in his mind that I was going to be the next great American writer. I think maybe it had something to do with the fact that he had wanted to be a writer himself, but ended up a lawyer. "Hey, at least I get to write briefs," he says sometimes, although I'm not exactly sure what briefs are. In any event, he was dead certain I had the makings of a natural-born writer. I just needed to tap into my inner talent, let my imagination rip, and look out. All those boy wizards and six pack-ups vampires would be running for the hills. But according to Dad's master plan, before becoming the next great American writer, I had to become the next great American reader. So I'm a typical about to be 6 years old. I've spent approximately 11 months preparing for my birthday, including a failed attempt at getting people to give me presents on my half birthday, until at last the big day comes. To say I'm excited is like saying Einstein new addition. Visions of trampolines and baseball bats are dancing in my head, and I'm running around the house screaming, "It's my birthday! It's my birthday! It's my birthday!" All of a sudden, my dad comes through the door, bursting with packages. "It's my birthday!" As I ran up to him, tons of presents spill out of the bags. I start to rip one open, and my dad says, "Not yet, Charlie Joe. Let's gather the whole family." You can pretty much guess the rest. In front of my whole family, including Moose, we didn't have Coco yet, I proceed to rip open book after book after book, the entire works of Mark Twain, the entire works of Roald Dahl, and the entire works of Matt Christopher. Now, nothing against those guys, but as far as I know, none of them have ever played in the major leagues, or built a trampoline, or even owned a trampoline. After opening the last book, I did what any self-respecting brand new 6-year-old would have done. I burst into tears and ran to my room. To this day, whenever I hear the name Mark Twain, I burst into tears and run to my room. P.S. I should clarify. When I said traumatic reading experience, I should have said traumatic year reading experience. I believe traumatic reading experience is what they call redundant. So, where were we? During the next month or so, a lot happened. Timmy and Hannah broke up after 9 days. Exactly. Thank you, Katie. Never wrong, Friedman. Turns out that Hannah, sweetheart that she is, went out with Timmy to help him save face after the Eliza and LaCrosse episode. I guess she figured that after 9 days, his reputation was fully restored. As a direct result of their breakup, I noticed I didn't feel that empty pit in my stomach / lungs / liver / heart area quite as much. Eliza, meanwhile, was now going out with Ricky Summers, whose long, spectacular blonde hair somehow made up for the fact that he was born without a personality. And Katie was still my unofficial best friend, even though she was getting a little weirder by the day. First, she made a random reference to becoming a nun, highly doubtful considering she's Jewish, which she then admitted was merely her way of saying that there were no good men in the world. Then she announced that with the right psychotherapy, even the most dysfunctional, out-of-it guy could be turned into the perfect boyfriend, and she would be just the girl to do it. Jake Katz discovered some website where a woman read a different entire book every day for a year and decided that someday he wanted to do that. Kill me now. Ms. Farrell brought Misty in on Bring Your Pet to School Day, which apparently only applied to her. She proceeded to eat the dry erase board. Misty, not Ms. Farrell. As for me, I got a B+ on my Billy's bargain paper. Ms. Farrell's note at the end, it's a start. I got my cell phone back. I got my computer back. I got my mojo back. It's always a little risky when I get my mojo back. Chapter 20. Sports are just as educational as reading. Think about it. There are tons of important lessons that you can learn on the field of play. Number one, keeping score, math. Number two, being part of a team, social studies. Number three, learning how to throw a curveball, physics. Number four, 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? Poetry. Number five, knowing your batting average or completion percentage or shooting percentage statistics, which apparently is a type of math. About a week later, on a particularly fine spring morning, me and my mojo found ourselves on the pitcher's mound for my travel baseball team. We were good, not great, all the elite players having been snatched up by the fancy, ridiculously expensive year-round premier baseball programs. In youth sports these days, the best athletes play one sport all year long, almost like a job. It's crazy, but the grass was green, the sky was blue, the bases were white, and it was a good day to play ball. My parents were there, and of course they'd brought the dogs. Moose and Coco were huge baseball fans, mainly because of the dropped hot dog scraps. We were up 4-3 going into the last inning, so I was channeling my inner Mariano Rivera trying to put the thing away for my team. But after two quick outs, I walked their number 9 hitter, Jeff Kleiner, who hasn't taken the bat off his shoulder all season. I always walk those kids for some reason. You know how the coach always says, throw it, don't aim it. Easier said than done. Then up comes their leadoff hitter, this short but incredibly fast kid named Andrew. Strike him out, my dad hollered. Hit one out, his dad hollered. Pipe down before we kick you both out, both moms whispered. So I'm standing on the mound trying to stare down Andrew, and I start thinking about glory. Okay, fine, not premier team glory, but good solid travel team glory. I start thinking about how much I want to strike this kid out and how I would give anything to be able to do it, which rang a really distant bell somewhere in my head. Who was it that said he'd give anything to win his baseball game? Someone I know, some other pitcher, but I couldn't remember who it was. I'm twirling the baseball in my hand, staring in at speedy little Andrew, when it suddenly occurs to me. I realize the person I'm trying to remember is Billy. That's right. Billy's bargain. Billy! Yikes! Wow. Okay, so this was what it was like to identify with a character in a book? It was true. I started thinking about Billy like he was a real person. What would Billy do in this situation? Would he have the confidence to get this final out? Or would all his doubts and fears come back to haunt him and make him choke? Would Billy be the hero and get carried off the field on the shoulders of his teammates? Or would he be the goat and wind up alone at 7-Eleven, drowning his sorrows in a big gulp? Then I remembered my conversation with my sister Megan when she predicted this exact thing would happen. Dang her! Why do people like my sister and Katie always have to be so right all the time? Now remember, I'd only read the first and last chapters, but all of a sudden, I was acting like a... wait for it... reader! I was thinking about the book, and even more to the point, I was remembering what happened in it, and my heart sank. I cared about what happened, what was happening to me. I'm not going to lie. I was scared. I shuddered, then snapped back to reality. I still had Andrew to contend with. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. The Mississippi kite is one of America's most elegant raptors, with long pointed wings and buoyant flight. These dove gray birds spend their summer hunting over plains and woodlands in southern United States. They often nest colonially, unusual for hawks, with a half dozen pairs in sight of one another in a grove of tall trees. By nesting in groups, they can work together to mob an approaching predator. Medium-sized and large insects dominate the kite's diet. During the breeding season, they seek varied prey from treetops to ground, even over water. But in migration, they become more focused. By late August, the birds come together in flocks and start down the east side of Mexico, joining with tens of thousands of other migrants in the famous River of Raptors. But not only raptors. Green darners, big blue and green dragonflies, emerge from wetlands all over eastern North America and also head south to breed. On their trail are the Mississippi kites, dining on the wing, sustained by the insects that are their traveling companions. Today's show is dedicated to the memory of Rusty Rose, a great friend to birds everywhere, including a group of Mississippi kites he followed, watched, and protected on his ranch in Texas. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.